Keeping you updated.
This is The Agenda with Georgia Tolley
on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Hello, and thank you for downloading this podcast from Tuesday, the 15th of March. On the programme today, we discuss the latest crime-fighting technology with Captain Engineer Mohammed Al-Shamsi from Dubai Police. Now, he's one of the organisers behind the inaugural World Police Summit, which is taking place at the moment in Dubai. Also, as Abu Dhabi Police manages to return 21 million dirhams worth of funds to the victims of scams, we talked about the steps that officers are taking to clamp down on cyber criminals. We also found out why it's so hard to hail a cab in Dubai right now. We spoke to Kareem Karani, who is Vice President of Ride Hailing at Kareem. Mohammed Suleiman gave us an update on the day's sporting headlines. And Stephen Jiang, the Beijing Bureau Chief for CNN, joined us to talk through rising COVID cases in China, which are increasing by the thousands every day. And that's despite the country's zero COVID policy. We also tried to persuade Sean McGeehan from the Expo 2020 team to reveal all about the closing ceremony. And we found out how the first ever quantum computing hackathon in the Middle East could find solutions for social good. That was with organiser Sana Odeh from NYU Abu Dhabi. Hey.
You're listening to The Agenda with Georgia Tolley
on Dubai Eye 103.8.
So have you found it hard to catch a cab in Dubai recently? I have to say we went out on Friday night. I think it was Friday night. Maybe it was Saturday night. And it was literally impossible. I mean, I know that 8 p.m. on a Friday or a Saturday is going to be some of the busiest times. But still, we literally, there was nothing to be had. And it was really tricky. We got really late. And I remember this from before Christmas because there were lots of tourists in town. But if anything, it now does feel even harder. And last week, the national newspaper reported on how Dubai's publicly owned taxi company hosted a recruitment day for new drivers. It took place on Friday. Dubai Taxi Corporation, which is run by the Roads and Transports Authority, were involved. At the moment, they've got 5,700 vehicles, and most of the cars do run 24 hours a day because they've got drivers on 12-hour shifts. But demand has noticeably outstripped supply in recent months. Now, obviously, that is the Dubai Taxi Corporation. There's also Kareem. There's also Uber. We've received lots of messages from people saying they've had issues hailing a car. Our producer, Poonam, uses Kareem daily, and she says that she's noticed changes in waiting times.
This is happening regularly to me now. I am waiting about 15 minutes, sometimes half an hour. I'm constantly having to cancel the taxi because they're taking so long, and then telling them that it's taking too long on the options that they give us, and starting again to book. As a result of the fact that sometimes I am waiting so long for a cream, I've now started to book an Uber, which is obviously a lot more expensive because they use more, you know, luxury cars. However, I do notice when I book them, they literally are about five times quicker than when I'm ordering a normal taxi via Kareem. And I'm not sure why. I'm not sure if they've got more drivers or because they're more expensive, less people want to pay for them. But that is my last resort when I can't find a Kareem.
Maria got in touch to say that she has also had issues.
It's been very frustrating booking a hala taxi through Kareem the past few days because I have to wait at least 10 to 15 minutes before my cab arrives. So I don't know what's wrong.
Well, before this turns into a Kareem bashing exercise, joining us now to discuss what's going on is Kareem Karani, who is Vice President of Ride Hailing at Kareem. If he's still there, if he still wants to talk to us. Hi, how are you?
Hi, Georgia. Thank you so much for having me.
Hi, Kareem. Thank you so much for staying with us. Oddly enough, people must get confused because obviously your name is Kareem, but you work for Kareem. I mean, you're literally one of the best named employees in the world.
Yes, it's one of the common comments I get whenever I introduce myself.
I'm so sorry. Don't worry. People used to sing Georgia on my mind to me. Fortunately, that has now gone out of fashion, but I know it must be frustrating. Okay, so as you heard, there are just two people who are finding it frustrating. I have to say, I'm not sure which ride hailing service we were using over the weekend, so this isn't necessarily a Kareem thing. But what is causing the delays? Do you know about them?
Yes, we do know about them, Georgia. We've been seeing, on average, the times for someone to get a car to them when they order a captain is around 1 minute more than it was a month ago and around 2 minutes more than it was in January. Now, the cause of this is actually a few different things that have been happening. Some of them are global and some of them are local to Dubai. So globally, we know that during COVID times, when demand really came down, a lot of the captains left the platform. And, you know, Kareem wasn't foreign to that. We had a lot of captains that sold their car and actually left the city and left the platform. And we've been working on actually ramping that back up. But there's another challenge that's actually been there globally, which is around the supply chain crisis. So you know that there is issues with semiconductor chips. And so car manufacturing has actually slowed relative to the demand of cars. So even though a lot of our partners have been out there trying to get cars on the road, those cars are just not available for them to be able to put on the road. So those are some of the things that are happening globally, causing a challenge. And then locally, of course, I think everyone feels it in Dubai. Dubai is just really a buzz right now. I mean, there's all kinds of events happening. It's not just Expo. I think beyond Expo, you know, Art Dubai, there was a Web3 conference. There's a lot of activity happening. And we've seen some tremendous growth. And I think we know that Dubai is doing well. You see it with all the traffic. And the demand and supply imbalances is what's causing a lot of the challenges that our customers are facing.
So obviously, it will quieten down once it gets to sort of July and August. Do you think you're going to be able to sort of resolve these issues before then? Because, I mean, like you just explained, there are some major supply problems.
Yeah, we're really hopeful about it. And there's a few different things. I mean, there's, of course, actions that we're taking now and immediately to try and help by getting cars on the road and trying to attract captains and you know, drivers who may not be on the platform today and bringing them onto the platform so that they're available for our customers. But as you said, we know that there is some seasonality that's coming with Ramadan in April, and the summer is a slower time for events in Dubai. We're in that peak event season right now. And so we think the combination of that seasonality along with some of these supply chain issues getting resolved in Q2 and going into Q3 will put us in a much healthier place to make sure that we can provide that experience that everyone is used to and that we would like to be providing to everyone.
How big is your fleet here in the UAE now?
It depends on if you're looking at it from a cars and captains perspective. There are around 3,000 cars that we have available. And then there are more captains, similar to what you were mentioning in taxis, that are working in more than one shift. We do have our vehicles that are being used in multiple shifts as well.
So I know that the RTA taxis, the Hala taxis, are also on your platform. Do you have control over those as well, or are they managed differently?
Yeah, they're managed. Actually, there's a joint venture that Kareem has with the RTA, which is the Hala taxi group, and that's managed as a you know, sister company, but a separate company.
Okay, so I'm going to go and chase down the RTA next to find out what they're doing to improve things as far as the speed of their taxis arriving. Now, just a sort of wider question. In the US, Uber and Lyft have actually started adding fuel charges to their fares. We've seen, obviously, the price of oil go up a lot recently. We're seeing the price of fuel going up as well. They've only sort of been a minimal increase, and they just sort of announced it in the last month. But it shows you how much of an impact gas prices, petrol prices have on transport. Is this something that Kareem would consider here in the Middle East if petrol prices do continue to go up?
Yeah, we are legally obligated to maintain a certain price relative to taxis. So if taxis pricing changes, we'll also follow suit and make sure that we're compliant with the rules that we have to follow.
Oh, that's interesting. So if the RTA does it with their Hala taxis, then but otherwise you're not allowed to do it. You have to follow what they do first.
We have we try to provide the most affordable rides that we can, but we have certain pricing requirements that have a requirement above the taxi pricing that we have to maintain. And so that's what we try to comply with, or that's what we do need to comply with.
That's really interesting to hear that. I mean, the RTA is currently hiring drivers. I mentioned that in the introduction. During the holidays, Kareem confirmed that you're looking to hire more drivers to address the shortage. Have you managed to bring any more on? Have you got any numbers on how many you've managed to bring on?
Yeah, we have been able to bring on hundreds of captains, actually, over the last few months. But the issue has actually been the cars. So as I mentioned, you know, the challenge has been we have more captains that are coming onto the platform than we have cars coming on. And what that means is you can add more shifts to the cars that you have, but usually that's not solving your peak time problem. So you were talking earlier about the problems you were facing on a Friday night we know Friday night is a peak time. So even if we're able to get more captains who come onto the platform and work another shift, that'll just be at different hours of the day. Usually those captains in the cars that are working are already working during those peak times. So the real solve to this will not just be about getting the captains, but hopefully seeing some of these issues happening with supply chain, where there'll be more vehicles that we can put on the road and actually address the peak time challenges that we're facing.
It must feel so frustrating that the business is out there and you just can't get the cars to do it. They had a similar story on the Business Breakfast this morning with car dealers. You know, but Ramadan is traditionally a time when you get to sell lots of cars, but this year it's just going to be an entirely different picture. Thank you so much for your time. So really, really appreciate you coming on the radio. And we look forward to speaking to you again in the future.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. That is Karim Karani, the Vice President of Ride Hailing at Careem. We've had lots of messages coming in. Everyone is texting on 4001. Few people sending in the WhatsApps as well on that 04871 5500. Lots of people have been finding it difficult to get taxis. They've been finding it hard to get Careems. One person writes in here saying, the main bugbear of mine is that Captain's Click arrived about 5 minutes before they actually arrived. So I then end up waiting long times. And with temperatures getting hot, it is really annoying. I presume they do it because they want to look like they arrived early. Another person here says, morning, Georgia. Taxi booking and especially Careem are beyond a joke. And that's before the rip-off fares. My goodness, that is a strong word here. I'm just going to move this along so I can read the whole thing. Drivers sit with the meters off, waiting for fares to hit peak, which I think they do on purpose, and then come online and rip us off. I have given up going out on the weekend. You end up paying more for a Careem than you do for some F&B. My goodness, there's strong feelings here.
Keeping you updated and informed.
This is The Agenda with Georgia Tolley
on Dubai Eye 103.8.
So you've probably heard me talking about it quite a bit this week already. The World Police Summit. It opened in the UAE yesterday at Expo 2020 Dubai. I am going to be going down there later on today. In essence, the conference looks at the best in future policing from around the world. So far, they've hosted discussions on drone attacks, the future of law enforcement, and the latest advances in crime scene forensics, which basically just sounds like something from a TV show. Joining me now to tell us more about it is Captain Engineer Mohammed Al Shamsi, who is Dubai Police's official spokesperson at Expo 2020 Dubai. Joins me now from the conference centre. We are live on Microsoft Teams. We are live on Facebook if you want to watch us and see what we look like. Hello there, sir. How are you?
Fine, thank you. It's a pleasure being at your esteemed platform.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for joining us. We are indeed a multi-platform at the moment, which is brilliant. Now, I understand that the Police Summit is already a massive success down there at Expo. Several of the talks at the conference have focused on future policing practices. Can you, my goodness, it's all kicking off there. Can you tell me a bit more about the new techniques that you are seeing at the World Police Summit that you expect to be adopted by Dubai Police in the future?
Sure. First of all, thank you for your question. Before talking about the future, let me just highlight the present, if you will. Dubai Police has Ghayath, a police vehicle that basically facilitates the entire services of an entire police station on wheels. Dubai Police also has smart police stations, SPS. Which are integrated interactive self-service police stations, so unmanned police stations, if you will, and many, many, many more. However, I would like everyone who's listening and watching us today to rest assured that no matter what form of practice and what form of technology the future holds in place for Dubai Police, it will be for a safer and happier Dubai.
It's really interesting there that you mentioned two of the innovations that Dubai Police has already introduced recently, which I don't think people really have anywhere else in the world. The idea of these sort of independent police stations, or they're sort of automated. They're not even manned, are they? And I know that they were tried out at Expo 2020 Dubai. Have they been a success?
Yes, they have. Now in SPS, we have more than 21 different SPSs all around Dubai, varying from kiosks to entire police stations. As you mentioned, you are correct. They are totally unmanned. So someone might be willing to submit a case or complain about something, but they are scared or somewhat embarrassed. So having that kind of privacy, if you will, helps this experience.
One of the other major elements that will be happening at this World Police Summit is that you've got people from all over the world coming together to sort of share best practice. And I know that the UAE cooperates with their counterparts in other parts of the world to solve crimes already. I mean, we've seen that illustrated by the fact that Ahmed Nasser Al-Raisi, who is an Emirati, was actually elected president of Interpol, which, of course, is the international crime-fighting organization. To what extent does Dubai Police interact with other police forces on a sort of day-to-day basis?
Okay. Under the umbrella of the Ministry of Interior, Dubai Police, as you mentioned, communicates with Interpol to reach its counterparts of law enforcement agencies from all around the world, which we are honored to have Major General Dr. Ahmed Nasser Al-Raisi as president. This, in return, reflects the trust of the entire world in not just the UAE, but also its law enforcement agencies.
What's great is that we've also seen over the last few months is quite a big sort of a number of people being arrested here in the UAE, which has been really interesting. So you can see how that sort of groupthink for international police services has really made all the difference as far as solving crimes and catching criminals. We're in an evolving environment at the moment when it comes to crime, because of course the increase in digital crime. What challenges do you see in policing as criminals find new ways of sort of skirting around the edges and committing crimes?
Okay, allow me to thank you first of all for your question. I believe this question did not come out came from concern. However, I would like to point out that it's on the contrary, actually. Crime has not been increasing in Dubai. It has actually been decreasing, which makes our life a little bit more curious. So we're trying to look for other things to do. That's why we're exponentially in improving in whether it is technology or other international best practices. With regards to criminals, as you mentioned, we have a horizon scanning foresight strategies that are in place, not only in our core business, which is crime catching, but also in our assisting services, such as using artificial intelligence and many more. This, in turn, helps Dubai Police to, for example, locate or place police vehicles at appropriate locations, which we predict that crimes may occur at, in order for us to reduce our response times to a mere 30 to 50 seconds.
Wow.
This, I believe, is not something that is easy to talk about. When you call the police and you have someone that arrives in your doorstep in less than a minute, this, I believe, is very impressive.
That's certainly very reassuring, particularly, if you've had a situation where, for example, you've lost a child or something to that effect, you know, and when speed is of the essence, so to speak. I have to say, it really does sound like it's kicking off down there. I'm going to be coming down to the summit, which is at Expo 2020 Dubai at the moment. It's being held in the conference center there. I mean, one of the most, there's a whole load of sort of conferences and panel discussions taking place. What are the key messages that you've had out of the summit so far? Obviously, we've only had one day. We've got a few more to go. But what are those key messages?
Okay. So, as you all know, Expo 2020 Dubai's theme is Connecting Minds and Creating the Future. And under the patronage of His Highness Sheikh Mohammed bin Rashid Al Maktoum, Vice President and Prime Minister of the United Arab Emirates and ruler of Dubai, the World Police Summit connected more than 200 speakers with more than 2,000 delegates, ranging from police chiefs to security experts from all around the world. More than 50 countries are attending this summit within these few days. I hope everyone that, whether they are in law enforcement or others, as you mentioned, can come to the World Police Summit and enjoy themselves. We have almost six conferences ranging, as you mentioned, from forensic science to drones to canine, and also crime prevention. So what are we trying to, what will we do? People come from all around the world to share their services in order for them to predict crime and help reduce it for a more safer and happier world.
So do you know what's really interesting? Last week I drove out to Jebel Ali for an event that the ARN was hosting. And as I was going out, a whole load of very impressive looking police vehicles came past me on trucks. And I was like, I thought there was a story there. I was quite excited as a journalist. I was like, wow, why are they importing so many of these, really big sort of police style trucks? And then today I saw pictures of them all in the national newspaper because, of course, they weren't being brought in for some exciting event or some big security sort of project. They were actually being brought in for the World Police Summit. So there are plenty of very cool machines down there. What else is there that I should be looking out for? I'm coming down later on. Which stands have you seen that you found the most impressive so far?
Okay. As you mentioned, today is the second day of the World Police Summit. Today, the forensics conference has already been started. There are a lot of forensics-related talks happening in all of the three conference rooms. All of these stands are quite interesting, especially Dubai Police stands, which we are also showcasing our drone deployment equipment. So, for example, when we have a specific crime that may occur in remote areas, for us to respond efficiently, we need to at least have eyes at a specific scene. And this deployment of drones technology allows us to quickly reach that area and have our resources focused at what is needed.
Sounds very cool indeed. I'm looking forward to going down and getting a closer look at all those machines that came in under the cover of darkness. And so, I was really excited. I was like, do they know something that we don't know? And yes, you did. It's the World Police Summit. Thank you so much, sir. Absolute pleasure to speak to you. Hopefully I'll see you when I come down later on this afternoon. But have a good day, and I hope the event goes very well indeed.
Thank you. Appreciate your time.
Thank you very much. That is Captain Engineer Mohammed Al-Shamsi. He is Dubai Police's official spokesperson, Expo 2020 Dubai, and one of the organisers of that World Police Summit, which opened yesterday.
You're listening to The Agenda with Georgia Tolley.
On Dubai Eye 103.8.
So I think it's one of the first topics that I ever did on The Agenda, Z. It was a feature on scamming, because my husband got scammed. And then when I started talking about it with my friends, we realized how common it was among our community. And then I came on the radio.
Yes. And we got lots of responses from other people saying, I have been scammed or I've almost been scammed. Right now there are messages pouring in about their experiences being scammed.
Yeah, there absolutely are. Melanie got in touch with us back when we did the topic in January. This is what she had to say.
So I almost got scammed early this morning. I received a call from a number and he goes like, this is from Abu Dhabi CI something. Your bank account has been blocked due to this and that violation of this. And I need your Emirates ID number. I'm not going to have any of this. I dropped the call. Anything can happen on that call.
We've also had a call in. Yaha says that she was approached by three scammers in the past month alone. One claimed to be an investing platform and the other two claimed to be recruiters. Thank you for that message. Do send in yours, 4001, or you can WhatsApp us on 04871 5500. Because phone scamming seems to have got so common that even a recent Abu Dhabi big ticket winner refused to claim their 100,000 dirham prize because they didn't believe the organisers when they rang to tell them they'd won.
That's hilarious. Well, but yeah, now that we finally got some good news because Abu Dhabi police are clamping down on scammers and they launched a dedicated team in August last year to handle these types of crimes, and they're coordinating their efforts with banks. And since last summer. They believe they've managed to stop cyber fraud in 80 to 90% of cases, which is such a high number.
So is it a growing problem? It certainly does feel anecdotally, it certainly feels as far as you guys getting in touch with us and amongst my community. But what did the police tell you?
Okay, we've been speaking to Abu Dhabi police, particularly Major Mohammed Al-Aryani. He's the head of anti-fraud at Abu Dhabi Police's Criminal Investigation Directorate, or CID, said the number of cases has increased rampantly here and, of course, globally. And in this last 7 months, about 1,740 cases of online fraud and cybercrime reported to the authorities in the UAE. But the good news is they've returned over 21 million dirhams worth of funds over the last 7 months to the victims of these phone scams and online fraud, which is fantastic. It's good news.
That is amazing. We so rarely have amazing good news to report on. That 9 times out of 10, when you're doing the news, it tends to be a sort of downside. Like you're usually saying, oh, cybercrime's increased or, you know, crime's increased. So what is the advice from the police if you are, you know, if you're worried about getting scammed, if you're worried that someone might get you, might have your details?
Well, obviously, authorities say you should report all crimes as quickly as possible. And if you accidentally reveal private information like your credit card details, your Emirates ID number, you should contact your bank immediately to stop the fund transfer or to block their cards and accounts. And as I told you, we've been speaking to Major Mohammed Rashid Al-Aryani, the head of the anti-fraud department at Abu Dhabi Police, and he sent us this message.
We advise community member to call Aman Service at 800-2626. If they've been contacted by these scammers, or to the nearest police station to register an official complaint.
So that's the advice from police. And a few weeks ago, we've also been talking to Dubai police, particularly First Lieutenant Ali Al Saadi. She is an e-crime investigation officer for Dubai police, and she told us about the types of scams that people have encountered here in the city.
There is different and variety of scams methods, such as phone call scams, BECs, which is business email compromises, and online shopping scams. These are some of the common scams that we are seeing like regularly here. And it is important to know that the scammers try to change their methods by concentrating on how the people are interested in what. So that might change, but for now, this is what we are looking on a daily basis.
Okay, so her job as an e-crime investigator is always evolving because, you know, these cyber criminals always find new ways to dupe people. And in fact, in the capital, Abu Dhabi police said one of the most common scams is where a caller who claims to belong to a government authority and who claims that some of the victim's information on record needs to be updated. And we heard from Melanie earlier, who said she got a call from someone pretending to be from Abu Dhabi police and was demanding her Emirates ID number.
I think that's really common. I've heard about that a lot. That's one of the big ones. And oddly enough, Helen got a message about 3 weeks after we did the scamming topic on the agenda. Helen actually got a message from someone saying that they'd heard our program and then someone had tried to scam them. And because they'd heard our program, they knew straight up that it was a scam, because these guys can be really, really quite strident, really forceful. And they pretend to be the police and they say, look, you're about to be, you know, you're going to get deported. Mm-hmm. You know, they kind of prey on the worries that we all have slightly as expats, that, you know, at any minute your visa could be rescinded and you could just be sent home and your whole life would be turned upside down. And so, and I know that that doesn't happen, but it's a sort of deep, dark fear. And that's what criminals find. They
it's
find
just cruel.
Those...
Exactly. They are banking on the fact that, you know, because of our fear of getting in trouble with authorities, that they may sort of dupe us into giving them some money.
Keeping you updated and informed.
You're listening to The Agenda with Georgia Tolley
on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Welcome back. Joining us now to talk about sports is Mohammed Salaman, who has had a busy day because he's already done a meeting with the Business Breakfast about what's going to be on their show tomorrow morning. I secretly listened in. So
you
I
did.
Will be...
You were eavesdropping, weren't you?
Yep,
yes. So well, you used the excuse of putting on your makeup in the green room.
Yeah.
And you were listening to all our brilliant ideas for tomorrow. tomorrow's show. So
yeah, they'll be on from midday today. That's absolutely fine. That's absolutely fine. I just a little bit of trickery there on my part. It's all fine. It's all fine in love and war when it comes to the Business Breakfast and the Agenda.
Exactly. We have a very complicated relationship, don't we? The two shows.
It's very complicated. Yeah. I think it started because I produced them for 3 years, and so I know them intimately.
Yeah.
Which means I know all their weaknesses. and their strengths.
And their strengths, I was going to say, yeah.
Let's start with football. I just did something very strange to my finger. I just bent it.
Double declutch it. That's the first time I've ever heard that word, double declutched.
Oh my gosh, that's because you're too young. That's what you used to have to do to cars to make them drive.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, yeah. You still have to do
double,
it with vintage
double
cars.
De-clutch.
You double declutch.
Okay. Is that for a manual car, obviously?
Yeah, but an old manual car.
I've never driven a manual car in my life, ever. So I was in Zanzibar recently on vacation. My parents live there, and the car that they have is a manual. And they offered me to drive it, and I said, no, there's no way I'm touching this, because I've never touched a manual car.
You're just bunny hop down the road. I have to say, stick is a lot easier. Right, okay, Lazina's on the other side of the glass going, will you talk about football? because there was a big result in the Premier League last night, which could have a major impact on the title race, you say.
Yes, so just one match last night in the Premier League. It was a late kickoff. It was at midnight last night, and I was crazy enough to stay up and watch this one. There was, of course, the golf happening as well, so I was actually double screening last night. I was watching the football and the golf at the same time until 2:30 in the morning. But the big match last night was between Manchester City and Crystal Palace.
Okay.
Now, City, obviously, atop of the table. They had a chance to go 6 points clear of Liverpool again, but they were held to a draw by Crystal Palace. All right, so it was a 0-0 draw. Both teams had chances. Probably City had the better chances. They hit the post, I think, three times in the end. But it was a 0-0 draw in the end. And that means that the gap between Liverpool and Manchester City is now just 4 points.
Okay.
Right? And City have a game in hand as well. So it's all really, really getting interesting at the top of the table. Now, the big match that's going to be coming up that might just decide this title race is going to be on April the 10th. All right, at 7:30 p.m. That's going to be between Manchester City and Liverpool.
Okay,
all right,
so that's the date from my diary.
Exactly. Yeah, that match could potentially decide who wins the Premier League title. It's going to be really interesting to see how that happens. So here is Manchester City manager Pep Guardiola talking to reporters after the match last night.
Okay.
Well, we played a really, really good game. Created a lot of chances, especially in the first half. Difficult side, defend really well, tight, and they were with the rhythm, and we played a really good game.
You created so much in the first half. Did you look to try and change anything at halftime, or was the message more of the same, please?
No, that continued the same. So patient, no concede, and we have our chances. We had it, we could not convert. Sometimes happen.
Second half, did you consider making any changes of personnel, or did you always believe that what you had out there would see the job?
They were playing good. Yeah, I thought a lot to make some changes, but they were playing good. And always, the guys were inside, had the ability to score a goal. But at the end, we play more with emotion, they defend, and with their people. But I think they were playing good.
Mm. How hard did Palace make it for you tonight, in all honesty, do you feel?
Well, we didn't score. That was the reason why, not the Crystal Palace.
That was Manchester City boss Pep Guardiola explaining how his side weren't able to beat Crystal Palace 0-0. Now, the interesting thing, Georgia, is that there's a lot of scrutiny on managers, right? Now, what happened last night was that, when things aren't going well, when your team isn't scoring, what do you usually do? You bring on subs, you change something around. He didn't make a single change last night.
Oh, how weird.
Yeah, so they played the full 90 minutes without making a single substitution. So obviously a lot of questions about that. Why didn't he bring on another player? Why didn't he switch anything up? But he is one of the most brilliant managers in the world, right? So I guess he knew what he was doing, but it didn't work out last night. And the other sort of question mark around him now is that City have been trying to get a striker in their team for the longest time. They tried to sign Harry Kane in the summer. That didn't work out. So a result like this really puts the spotlight on that decision again. Why haven't they signed up a really high quality striker yet? They obviously have very deep pockets over at Manchester City.
They do now.
So a lot of questions around why they don't have a striker yet. But yes, a disappointing result last night for Manchester City, 0-0 against Crystal Palace, and the title race has gotten a lot more interesting.
It has indeed. Now let's move on to cricket, because we have the second test between Pakistan and Australia going on right now in Karachi.
That's right. So Australia very much in control of this one. It is day 4 over in Karachi. So just to bring up to speed with what's happened in the match so far, Australia batted first, made 556 for 9, declared a huge total there. And then yesterday, they bowled out Pakistan for just 148.
Ooh.
So it's completely skittled out. Mitchell Starc, the fast bowler, took 3 wickets. Now, Georgia, I brought a cricket ball into the studio.
Don't throw it to me.
I'm not going to throw it. Don't worry, because it is very heavy and very, very hard.
I got into so much trouble when you did that
with the football. Right? And it's funny because Tom Brady actually U-turned on his retirement yesterday, so we shouldn't have even had that segment in the first place.
Exactly.
But Mitchell Starc took 3 wickets yesterday, thanks mainly to his exploitation of something called reverse swing. Have you heard of this phenomenon?
I have not.
So have you seen cricketers shine the ball?
Yes, they rub it on their trousers.
Exactly. So they put spit on the ball, they shine it on their trousers. They do that in order to get reverse swing.
Okay.
So what happens is that, look, if I have the cricket ball here, if I shine one particular side of it, as the match goes
actually,
on...
Actually, you can see that one is shinier than the
other. This one is shinier, yeah. So my team, when we played with this one, we put a lot of spit on this particular side of the ball.
Oh, how nice. Exactly. How COVID-friendly.
So what happens is when one particular side is shinier, the ball swings towards that side.
Okay.
All right?
Okay.
And that gives the bowler an advantage.
So you're not allowed to press your fingernail into it, though,
No,
are
you can't put your fingernail into it. You can't put any sort of foreign object onto it.
Okay.
Obviously, there was that huge controversy with ball tampering a couple of years ago with the Australian team.
Because they do it.
They do it, yeah, and they try to get away with it. So Mitchell Starc got a lot of reverse swing yesterday, and that really helped him pick up those 3 wickets. So Pakistan bowled out for 148 yesterday. Australia, surprisingly, didn't enforce the follow-on. They decided to bat again. They declared this morning on 97 for 2, setting Pakistan 506 runs to win, and Pakistan are currently 14 for 1.
All right,
so a mountain to climb for Pakistan. They still need 492 to win. I think that's very unlikely, although they still do have 2 full days to do that. But it's very much looking like it's going to be Australia who are going to be winning this match quite comfortably.
Right, let's move on to golf, because the Players Championship came to a thrilling conclusion last
night. Yes, that's right. So the Players is one of the most prestigious events in the world of golf. It's on the PGA Tour. The prize fund for that particular event is the highest in golf. It's $20 million altogether. Of which the winner bags a cool $3.6 million. All right.
That's a nice day in the park.
So last night, it was Cameron Smith from Australia who won the Players' Championship. He finished on 13 under par for the tournament. He held off a charge from India's Anirban Lahiri, who was leading the tournament after 3 rounds. Now, Lahiri was ranked 322nd in the world going to this tournament, and he was really in charge of this tournament for large parts of yesterday. But it was a thrilling conclusion in the end. Cameron Smith, the Australian, a wonderful win for him. Bags, like I said, $3.6 million for that one. And it was a really emotional time for Cameron Smith because he is from Australia, and obviously they have very strict restrictions when it comes to travel. So it was the first time he was able to meet his extended family, and they had a bit of a reunion at this particular tournament. So his girlfriend was there, his parents were there, his sister was there. And here is Cameron Smith talking about how important it was to have his family around for this particular win.
Yeah, it was unreal. You know, I haven't seen him for 2.5 years. Golf really took a back seat the last couple of weeks, and it was nice to get this for him.
How much did that help you? Just kind of keep it real and be honest with yourself and not be so focused on this, but be focused on having the time with them.
Yeah, like I said, I mean, it was didn't spend much time at the golf course last week. Spent a lot of time here this week, obviously, but it was so nice. It's just really nice to have him here. Nice to give Mum a hug, and yeah.
Very emotional there. Amazing to hear that sort of level of honesty, I suppose.
It is, yeah. And really, like you said earlier on, that golf really took a backseat when COVID was at its peak a couple of years ago. He wasn't able to meet his parents because obviously he lives in the States playing his golf in Florida mainly. So just to have that reunion for him, and he ended up winning. So
yay!
A wonderful result for 28-year-old Cameron Smith. It's his fifth PGA Tour victory.
So we've got about 20 seconds to go. We've got a couple of big football matches to look forward to tonight. Who's in action? What time is kickoff?
Sure. So we have 2 second-leg round of 16 Champions League matches tonight. Manchester United take on Atletico Madrid. The aggregate score on that one is 1-1. The second match is going to be between Ajax and Benfica. The aggregate score there is 2-2, and both matches kick off at midnight UAE time.
Thank you very much, Mohamed Salaman. As ever, a pleasure. Hope to speak to you tomorrow.
Thanks, Roger. You too.
Keeping you updated.
This is The Agenda with Georgia Tolley
on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Hello there, welcome back. Now, COVID-19 cases in China are increasing by the thousands every day, and that is despite the country's pursuit of a zero COVID policy. Joining us now to give us the latest on the news, literally on the ground, is Stephen Jiang. Now, he's the Beijing Bureau Chief for CNN International, responsible for overseeing the network's coverage of China and its operations in the country. So he's really able to give us an overview. Joins us on Microsoft Teams as well. Hi there, Stephen. How are you?
Hi, Georgia. I'm good. I think last time I was on the show, you were somewhere skiing. Your friend, your co-host Tom told me. So welcome back, I guess.
Did he tell you with a certain amount of sort of fury in his eyes? Because I went to Georgia skiing and then I got COVID afterwards. And so I actually ended up having 2.5 weeks off, which everyone got a little bit exasperated about, it's fair to say.
Oh, my goodness. I think we were just talking about how appropriate you were skiing when we were talking about the Beijing Winter Olympics. But well, sorry about the COVID part.
Oh, don't worry. I was fine in the end. Oddly enough, yes, we were very inspired by the Winter Olympics. And it's fabulous to be speaking to you again. At least I get to talk to you this time.
That's right. One thing people forgot to mention is the Paralympics were just wrapped up, and the Ukrainian team was number two on the medals table. I think that was very touching and inspiring.
I totally agree. Yeah, that was a really wonderful story. And I know that I had several interviews with Ukrainian Paralympians who said that they really felt the warmth of the world come out to them at the event. So that must have been truly extraordinary. I mean, you've had so many stories in your patch just recently, not least the fact that that China continues to pursue the zero COVID policy, and yet it just doesn't seem to be working right now. Are there particular areas of the country that are experiencing an outbreak?
Well, this outbreak is now pretty much across the country, especially in several major cities, including Shanghai, which, of course, is the biggest city, but also in Shenzhen, just across the street, across the border from Hong Kong, and also in the northeastern part of the country and eastern part of the country. So it's really everywhere. I think you mentioned the number 5,000, which was the latest number we got for Monday. Now, that may seem to be high by Chinese standard, but when you think about this country, it's 1.4 billion people. So that's still a very tiny fraction of the population. Really, the story is, as you mentioned, their insistence on this zero COVID policy, which is why we are seeing this again, almost like deja vu, a lot of increasingly harsh containment and control measures being implemented across the country, sometimes even more drastic than what we saw back in 2020 during the peak of the pandemic here, when Wuhan, remember that central Chinese city, was the global epicenter. So that's why I think, you know, a lot of people really, in a way, getting some sort of COVID fatigue, because as you mentioned, it's 2022. The rest of the world is reopening, relaxing, or even ditching all the rules. But China is almost going back to 2020.
It is extraordinary that the Chinese authorities are happy to lock down entire cities of say 17 million people in order to stop this virus from spreading. How are the Chinese people reacting?
You know, it's interesting. The latest figures I think I just saw was 37 million Chinese people now across the nation under some form of lockdown. There is different sort of degrees of lockdown. In some parts of the country, it's very much like a so-called hard lockdown. You're not even allowed to step out of your apartment or a house. But in some cases, in some cities like in Shenzhen, you are allowed to leave your neighborhood to buy groceries or seek medical attention. Better than that, you are pretty much ordered to stay in. But then again, in Shanghai, you don't have a citywide kind of lockdown, but you have an increasing number of so-called snap lockdowns. So that means when authorities detect a confirmed or suspected case or a close contact, they would just lock down a premise, being at a hospital, a school, an office building, or even a shopping mall with very little advance notice. So trapping, you know, school children, employees and shoppers and patients, really, that's really what a lot of people are increasingly concerned, because as you mentioned, this is against this backdrop of most of the world are opening up. So I think that's why on social media, even though it's very much a censored kind of like environment here, you start to hear a lot more complaints. The sentiment is sort of tilting towards a lot of the voice of opposition to this kind of very drastic measures in this day and an age, basically. Georgia?
I don't have very long with you, but do you think there's any chance that the Chinese might drop their zero COVID policy in the near future?
You know, we were hopeful before the Olympics because, for example, they just approved the rapid home testing kits, which some people take as a sign of moving towards relaxation of rules. But remember, this is a one-party kind of power structure. Everything's about politics. The one thing on their calendar that they consider the most important is this so-called 20th Party Congress. That's the National Congress of the ruling Communist Party. And that event is important because the leader, Xi Jinping, is expected to assume an almost unprecedented third term, paving the way for him to rule life. So that is their top priority. So that's why they want everything to be under absolute control, social stability being the key. That's why now we are not very optimistic anything will be relaxed before then. And that Congress is scheduled to be taking place around November time, Georgia.
Really interesting to get that update. Stephen, thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate it. Have a good day.
You too.
We hope to speak to you soon. Stephen Zhang, the Beijing Bureau Chief for CNN International, joining us there to give us an update on the current COVID-19 situation in China.
Keeping you updated and informed.
This is The Agenda with Georgia Tolley
on Dubai Eye 103.8.
So welcome back. It is time for our weekly update from Saudi Arabia. And joining me live on the line is Rawan Radwan, who is a journalist based in Jeddah for Arab News. Hi, Rawan. How are you?
Hi, good morning.
Hello, it's lovely to have you on the line. I know that there have been some pretty positive developments in the kingdom just recently when it comes to COVID-19. Very interesting to sort of compare the tale of two cities, so to speak, because we just crossed live to China. And now we're crossing live to the kingdom. So what's been going on?
Well, the first thing I got to say is that things are looking definitely positive. We have some of the lowest numbers ever recorded. That's the first thing. And then we have something that's quite promising and quite like comforting to know that they are closing. But the Ministry of Health is now closing Tataman clinics. These clinics were available to everyone, you know, just if you're suspecting, you know, an infection, you just go and get yourself checked out. That was how it was at the beginning. And it was they had like over 200 clinics across Saudi Arabia. And then with things developing, of course, they were providing COVID vaccines, providing COVID PCR tests as well. So you can actually feel a little bit more comfortable knowing that these clinics are now closing and that things are going back to normal or gradually going back to normal.
That is good news. I've actually seen a few friends from Dubai have started to go on holiday in Saudi Arabia, which I think is a sure sign that, you know, things have got back to normal. And that is very good news indeed. And we've got a couple of education stories coming out of the kingdom as well. Not least that the Ministry of Education is planning to send 70,000 Saudi students abroad.
Yeah, this is just a preliminary number, actually. Apparently, there was a conference a few days ago that and the Minister of Education announced that he will send, will send over 70,000 by 2030. And we're talking at some of the most prestigious schools in across the world, whether it be in the U.S., U.K., Europe, or East Asia. And the target is to provide them with not only the best educational opportunity, but also guide them in certain paths. They have four paths of which a student can follow and can join. And then after graduation, they can join a specific workforce or field or sector based on that path they're going through. So that path could also include courses, webinars, something that will basically provide them with the right tools and resources in order to get a good job and all that. So that's just one scheme. But the thing is, this isn't new. This is just another one of the scholarship programs that the kingdom has been providing for Saudi students since the 1960s and 70s. Mm. And that was on an official basis. We can go back to the 1930s as well, if you'd like.
So, do you know, I've noticed that whenever you meet, nine times out of ten, if I meet somebody from Saudi Arabia, they've studied abroad. And I hadn't realized that it was a sort of state-sponsored program and it had been running for so long. Do people still come home? Because that's the risk. If you send people off to study abroad, do they then bring their expertise back?
Of course, many students do. Of course, if the opportunity was provided and they had to stay, if they were able to stay, that's a different thing. But that's a different story. But many of, like, let's say 95 or let's say 98% of students that leave come back with expertise. I mean, yeah, and you're right. A lot of people went. A lot of people were provided and given the opportunity to go and study abroad. We're talking, my grandfather was one. My mom and dad were one. I am one student as well. Exactly. My grandfather was an engineer, Egypt, Germany. My mom, a professor at the university, the U.S. I am a master's graduate from Europe. So you can imagine just like three generations of scholarship students, and that's literally the case with almost half the country, if I'm not mistaken.
Amazing.
But that's the thing. Up until 2011, just the U.S. alone had over 70,000 Saudi students, just the U.S. So you can imagine how it was in Europe, East Asia, China. China had a lot of medical students, by the way. A lot of Saudi students went to China to study medicine.
Well, it's so interesting you raise that, because it sounds like the relationship between China and Saudi Arabia is getting ever closer, because they're changing one of the languages in government and private schools in the kingdom, aren't they?
They're adding, actually. So we are teaching English now, but now we've added Mandarin. And this was actually a plan since 2019. Of course, it was postponed due to COVID, but this was the initial plan. 2019, Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman visited Beijing. So this was an agreement in February, actually, of 2019. And then there was an agreement between the two countries, you know, to just basically strengthen bilateral ties. And this is a very good idea as well, because you never know, you know, for every Saudi or anyone who's applying for a job, I mean, a second language or a third language is always a plus. So imagine if you have Mandarin on your CV, that would just be, whoa, okay.
And awesome. It basically looks awesome. If you've got Arabic and Mandarin and English, you're basically nailing it when it comes to the job market.
There you go.
Oh, that's really interesting. Thank you so much, Rowan. As always, fantastic to get you on the line. Really appreciate your time and your insight. And we look forward to speaking to you next week. Yeah, have a great one. Rowan Radwan, who is a journalist based in Jeddah for Arab News, giving us an update there.
You're listening to The Agenda with Georgia Tolley.
Yeah. On Dubai Eye, 103.8.
I want to speak to Shona, because I'm going to try and persuade her. She's from the team at Expo 2020 Dubai, and I'm going to try and persuade her to tell me what's going to happen in the closing ceremony.
This is my time.
So, Shona, is this our time to find out what's going to happen in the closing ceremony? I basically know your answer, but do you see how I'm layering on the pressure with music?
I do like this, yes, but it's going to be a little bit more time before we announce what's happening for the closing ceremony, because we've got so much more happening in between times. So we're not ready yet to talk about the end. We want to talk about everything that's on this week. It's another packed schedule again.
Well, that is fair enough. We have only 16 more sleeps to go until the end. And as you know, our very own Chris McCarty spoke to the greatest of all time of motorsport, none other than seven-time Formula One world champion Mercedes driver Lewis Hamilton. But you won't be calling him that from now on, because he announced this yesterday.
I'm really proud of my family's name, Hamilton. None of you might know that my mum's name is LeBallastier, and I'm just about to put that in my name. Because I don't really fully understand the whole idea when people get married, then the woman loses her name. And my mum, I really want her name to continue on with the Hamilton name, so...
So that was an awesome occurrence that took place yesterday. That was Chris McCarty, our very own Chris McCarty, talking to Lewis Hamilton at Expo 2020 Dubai. They were also lucky enough to get a full interview, which you can listen to on the Off Script podcast on the Dubai Eye website. So Shona, I mean, you know, talk about pulling it out of the bag with the last 2 weeks to go. What else have we got to look forward to this week?
Well, for this week, another big week of entertainment. So for the Philippine community, we have two big nights. Wednesday night, we have Maurice Metamon at DC Arena from 7:30 to 10:30. And on Friday, we have Parokia Ni Edka on the Jubilee stage from 8:30 till 10 p.m. So I know both are very popular, so we're expecting big attendance for those.
Brilliant.
We also, it's obviously, as you know, we celebrate different countries. We give them a national day. And actually, Ireland is celebrating not only their national day with Expo, but it is actually St. Patrick's Day on Thursday. So they have a packed lineup of entertainment happening on Thursday across the site, including a gala concert in the evening as well. We will be having lots of fireworks this week. We're having fireworks on Thursday and on Saturday. And Friday is going to be a very special day. So Friday, the UAE will be observing Hag al-Layla, very much a lovely tradition aimed at children. And we will be observing that. We will have 200,000 goodie bags for children.
Wow.
That will be given out. We've got a camel parade with 50 camels in the evening going around the site.
Amazing.
There'll be a special stamp for people to collect. We know how, particularly the children, love their stamps.
Oh, yeah, so my children are obsessed with the stamps.
Well,
obsessed.
A new stamp that will be, you can either get from the visitor centre, or you can get it from the family place, or indeed go along to Samin. If you haven't checked out Samin, that's an area where we are demonstrating all the Emirati traditions and so on. So a lovely area there
it's
to go
gorgeous.
And actually see.
Yeah, we really
so,
love that.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah, you see the sort of the net making and the palm weaving. A really, really cool
Absolutely.
Area, actually.
Really,
and new.
Really good area to go to, yes.
I didn't see that in my sort of first early tours back in, my goodness, back in October.
Well, they've actually just during October, or sorry, starting in October, they started building a dhow, which is now complete. So
cool.
Again, showcasing the work. So that's been going on during the course of Expo at Samin. So definitely worthwhile checking out. And then in terms of other entertainment, we've got Gugush, a very well-known singer from 8:30 till 10 on Thursday at Jubilee. And then various DJs. So we've got DJ Crime from the UK on Friday night, DJ Fizz on Saturday night. So again, a really packed lineup of entertainment taking place, as well as everybody trying to ensure that they do visit all those country pavilions and make sure that this is the penultimate weekend to actually come to Expo. So,
oh my gosh, is it already?
Everybody here. Yes, we've only got 2 weekends left.
Oh my gosh, that's huge. Okay, so Friday night is the one to bring the kids because that's when you've got the camels and the special stamp.
Precisely.
And then the young'uns can come over the weekend for the DJs.
Absolutely.
And how, I mean, I have to say, the site is brilliantly busy now, which is so wonderful to see, especially with all the school groups. How many people have visited Expo 2020 so far? And just in case people hadn't realised, that the reason why we keep on referring to this is because back when Expo was delayed, everyone said, so there were going to be 25 million visitors to Expo. And then, of course, we had COVID-19. And as journalists, you know, you peck away at this. You're like, well, come on, you're going to bring the number down. You're going to bring it down. And Expo never did. Expo never said, look, because of the pandemic, because of COVID, we're going to have to bring our expectations. You know, we're going to have to lower our expectations. And I have to say, you've proven all the cynical journalists wrong, because last I heard you were 17 mil. And so what are you now?
Well, it's a lot higher now. We're now over 19 million. So just
I think
in the last week alone, we've had 1.6 million visits.
No way. You're going to smash
which
it.
Which is just phenomenal.
That's very, very exciting.
Actually, we've had over 2.7 million children that have visited Expo since the beginning of the event, so which is a phenomenal amount, and that's important to us in terms of the youth really benefiting from that. So I will give you one sneak thing in relation to the closing ceremony. There will be a lot of children involved, and I'll tell you more about that soon.
Okay, I might have a sneak little bit of knowledge about that, but I'm not going to say it because it's important to keep these secrets. But I'm pleased to have something. I will cherish that little secret to my heart because you guys are amazing at keeping things under wraps. Like we try to fish around, you know, which stars are coming, you know, trying to get an exclusive. Never managed to do it. But so thank you so much, Shona, the very tight-lipped Shona McGeehan from the communications team at Expo 2020.
2020. It will be an amazing weekend. Plenty more to look forward to.
Keeping you updated and informed.
Say, 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 hey, hey, now, baby.
You're listening to The Agenda with Georgia Tolley
on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Hello there and welcome back. Now, NYU Abu Dhabi has announced plans to host the first ever quantum computing hackathon in the Middle East. The plan is to find solutions for social good. And we're joined on the line now by organizer Sana Odeh from NYU Abu Dhabi to sort of explain it a bit, to be honest, because, I mean, starting with quantum computing, which I'm not sure I entirely or even slightly understand. Sana, how are you? Thanks so much for joining us on the line and on Microsoft Teams.
Thank you. Thank you, Georgia, for including me. This is really wonderful, a wonderful opportunity. And I agree that it is very confusing and it's very hard for people to relate to this concept because it's a very new concept for a lot of people. But it's a very important concept to mainstream and to explain to everybody because it's the new reality. It's the near future. It's going to transform all our entire world around us. It's the new innovation. If Google and Amazon and the web was the innovation of the 20th century, this is the innovation of the 21st century, where millions of the job, where all our world will be obsolete, from crypto to banking to everything that we know, even blockchain. So it's very important to bring the knowledge, the techniques, the understanding, the awareness of it to everywhere around the world, to involve people to solve problems related to their communities, to the priorities from science to art and so on and so forth. It's extremely important. In terms of the explanation, the simplest way I can say is that the way computers are running today is by having basically a binary bet, either on or off. So it's just one possibility of either on or off. With quantum computing, it's possible to have two states at the same time, which unleashes a lot of powers. So for example, an example of that is that we have been focusing on finding medicine cures for vaccines for COVID. And it's been taking us basically years to do that. Maybe a year, even because we collaborated, the entire world collaborated, and that was the best that we can do. But with quantum computing, we can even do that in weeks and months. So you can see how much the power that it unleashes to solve very, very complicated problems that we couldn't solve before. So it's really important to see that, to unleash and to understand the power of computing and its impact on communication, on banking, on climate, on food security, crypto security, blockchain, and everything else.
My goodness.
This is basically the power of the future, yes.
I mean, you get a sense there of how all-encompassing it is and what a big impact it will have. And I know that Abu Dhabi is very keen to place itself at the forefront of quantum computing. They are building their own quantum supercomputer at the moment. It will be the first in the UAE. And I suppose the idea behind a quantum computer, as you mentioned there, is that they can just process so much more information so much more quickly.
Yes, exactly. So it's behind that is all these algorithms, mathematical, physics, chemistry, biology, all these really, really tough algorithms that we couldn't solve before. It can be solved within a fraction of a second now. And, there's so many companies that are working on that, from IBM to Google to Amazon. I know even Amazon is trying to build four regions in the UAE, which means that, you know, millions and millions of dollars of investments even in this region. So with the government building a supercomputer, quantum computing, NYU Abu Dhabi has a center now, just basically launched the Center for Quantum Computing, and we're so proud with that about that, because we're going to have researchers, we're going to have students, we're going to have programs that are, so it's not just important to have the machines, but it's very important to have also scholars that will be working to solve all these algorithms, again, from health to even art to math and physics and so on and so forth.
So you've got 200 participants from more than 30 countries all coming together. Is it at the end of this month to sure. take part in the hackathon? How will that work out? What will they do? What are the prizes?
Great question. So they're all coming here, starting arriving on the 29th, the 30th. We have them. We have about 17 talks that focusing on quantum computing and different areas of quantum computing. And then we decide on the challenges. We form the teams, and they start coding on the 30th. And then on the 30th at night, we're hoping to have an event at the Louvre, still in the work, with DJ Spooky, who is also a fellow. He's a musician, a very famous musician, but also a fellow at the Center of Computing at Yale. So we're hoping to do that event at the Louvre at night. We can send you more information to announce it. And then the following day will be all coding. The teams will be code working on complicated algorithm related to different fields, again, from the arts and the sciences. And then on the final ceremony, where teams would unleash their talented solutions in front of renowned judges at 5 p.m. at NYU Abu Dhabi on April 1st, and then there will be awards. The awards ranges from internship at very renowned research quantum computing center around the world, from the Quantum Institute in Canada to internship maybe here at ITT and so on and so forth. So we're really trying to focus on talent being unleashed even afterwards, and maintaining that and following up with the team even after they finish with their hacks.
Amazing opportunity there. They will be the participants will be given access to the Oxford Quantum Circuits quantum computer, which has been given the name Lucy, which is much more understandable for me. Thank you so much for your time. Really, really interested to hear how that's going to work. And I wish you all the best in this amazing quantum computing hackathon. Lovely to speak to you. That's Sana Odo from NYU Abu Dhabi.
Keeping you updated and informed.
This is The Agenda with Georgia Tolley
on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Welcome back. Now, when Zina and I read this story in the newspaper yesterday, we weren't sure whether we should do it on the radio. It was a really difficult one. And it was a really sort of, it's a really emotive subject. And I have to say, I find it really hard even saying the words. I don't know whether it's a particularly or a peculiarly British thing, but there is something about animal cruelty that really gets me going. I mean, there's a stereotype that British people like their animals, like their dogs, like their pets more than they like their children. And there is a little bit of truth in that, I think, in some families. I mean, obviously, it's a joke, obviously, but animal cruelty is something that I think I have grown up completely abhorring. And I'm sure that for, 99% of the rest of the population here in the UAE, that is exactly the same position. This is a bit of a sort of health check. If you've got children in the car, you might not want them to hear this one sentence, which I'm about to say, which is that a stray cat has been found shot by an air gun and tied to a pole in Dubai. While still alive, the abused animal was found near Dubai Festival City on Saturday and has unfortunately since had to be put down because he wasn't going to survive from his injuries. The crime comes after a spate of reported animal cruelty cases across the UAE, really shocking cases, including a stray dog who's now called Grace, a bit of a happier story for you, that was shot with an air gun. She's now been adopted by Sheikh Hamdan bin Mohammed, the Crown Prince of Dubai. And you can actually see she's featured quite heavily on his Instagram account, which gives you an implicit sense of how animal cruelty is perceived here in the UAE. You know, you've got the Crown Prince adopting an abused dog, just to give you an indication of exactly how strongly I imagine the authorities in this country feel about it. To discuss the animal rights landscape here in the UAE, I asked Zina if she could find us an expert. And I am joined by Amira William on the line. She's the director of Stray Dogs Umul Quwain. Amira, thank you so much for joining us. Really appreciate your time.
You're welcome.
It's lovely to have you.
Thanks for having me.
An absolute pleasure. And I understand it was actually your organisation that initially cared for Grace, the dog. Is that right?
At the same time as Grace, we also had, because we've had several abuse cases reported in the past couple of months, actually, that we've taken an under our wing. And I think there was a little bit of confusion around the cases that we were reporting on social media and Grace. But no, Grace was, she wasn't rescued by us. She was rescued by another organisation.
Yes.
But we also followed her story closely as well, because the abuse cases that are occurring in the UAE are interlinked in the sense that a lot of the cruelty that are happening, that is happening to dogs in particular, sort of they follow the same pattern. We've had multiple dogs that have been shot, not just this year, but this year the cases seem to have increased. But it's something that we've seen right since the onset of Stray Dog Centre. And I think that one of the issues, firstly, is the confusion around who people actually report cases to. You know, if you see with our cases that we post online, we get a plethora of responses saying, well, you know, why don't you report to the police? So there's confusion, firstly, around the reporting mm-hmm. of abuse cases. And the first actually point of call is the MOCCAE, or Ministry of Climate Change and Environment. They have a bio alert portal online, which people can access easily to report abuse cases and any evidence that they may have, whether it's pictures of the animal, whether it's a report from the vet. So that is actually the first point of call when reporting abuse cases from there, because the MOCCA are very responsive. We report every single case, whether or not there's an outcome, a positive outcome, because for them to keep statistics as well on the number of animals that are being abused. So it's really important to report the cases.
So just for clarity, this is illegal in this country, isn't it?
There are laws protecting animal rights in the UAE. And I would say that the laws are at an emerging stage, because, say, for example, in our emirate, when we're dealing, you know, with any type of abuse cases, people are still not up to date with what the latest legislation is to protect animal rights. So we're still at an emerging stage where, you know, there has to be education around animal welfare laws and protection.
How many cases do you think you report a year of abuse?
To MACCA last year, we reported approximately 22 cases last year.
Do you have your... Now, we need to be very careful here, but do you have your suspicions mm-hmm. of the... I suppose the age group of who is committing this? I sort of imagine it, maybe incorrectly, I imagine it being young teenage boys with too much time on their hands and a cruel attitude. Maybe I'm completely wrong.
I think you're partly correct, especially in the cases where dogs are being shot, because one, not everybody has access to guns in the UAE. Mm. I think that a lot of the incidences that have happened in Umau Kuang in particular, I can really only speak to what's happening here, but you know, it's been reported back to us by labourers, confidentially, of course, off the record, that you know, they've seen young guys hooning around and shooting the dogs. Mm. Of course, to get them to actually testify or to give a written statement is a totally different story, because there's a fear. You know, a fear, one, they're going to lose their job. There's repercussions that come with them actually reporting, mm-hmm. You know, and so there's that fear that exists as well.
It makes you realise just how important it is for everyone to report as much as possible, if not directly, yes. to the Ministry of Climate Change and Environment, then at, mm-hmm. at the very least to an organisation like yourselves.
Yes.
So,
and I think that the more people do report, you know, the cases, and then, you know, it's important because the MOCCA need to know, you know, how many dogs are being abused, for example, mm-hmm. every year. Now, this year alone, I'm saying that it's increased because we've had several cases in the first 3 months of this year, not just dogs being shot, but we've had cases of dogs that have been used as bait dogs, and all confirmed by our vets. So we don't just off the top of our head say, oh, we think this dog's been abused. Mm. We ensure that the dog is checked by the vet, and then we get the opinion of the vet, you know, in terms of what actually happened to the dog. We had a case recently, Henry, and, you know, his injuries were horrific. They're probably the worst injuries that I've ever seen in my whole time in the UAE. And basically half his head was ripped off. And although he's recovering now, you know, that was really extreme. Mm. So the cases of cruelty, animal cruelty, seem to be getting worse. And last night we picked up a dog from Hata area. She had been shot. Her leg had been...
I'm just going to pause you momentarily, just in case there are children in the car on the way back from nursery, just because... But I mean, in some ways, it's important for people to hear how bad the injuries are. But in other ways, I just have to be alert that that nurseries were, you know, nursery pickup time was around midday. I think it's really important that we talk about this, though. Amira, I'm going to just keep you on the line for a couple of minutes. We've just got to go to a quick break. And then I want to come back and just, if we can, sort of talk about how attitudes more widely towards animals are changing and the work that you've been doing to encourage that. So we'll be back in just a minute. We're speaking to Amira William, who's the director of Stray Dogs Umal Quayne.
You're listening to The Agenda with Georgia Tolley. Yeah!
On Dubai Eye, 103.8.
Hello there, welcome back. We are discussing the sad spate of animal cruelty reports that have come through over the last 3 months. On the line, we've got Amira William, who is director of Stray Dogs Umal Quayne. This is off the back of a truly tragic story that was reported in the newspapers yesterday regarding a stray cat who was found abused and sadly had to be put down. Now, Amira, I mean, there are laws that state that it is illegal to abuse an animal. Article 432 of the Federal Punishment Law stipulates that anyone found torturing or abusing an animal can be fined 10,000 dirhams. But it's not so much... It's good that there are punishments, but really you want to educate people so that they don't do it in the first place rather than catching them and fining them afterwards. How are you, with your organisation, how have you been working to try and change attitudes in the community towards sort of towards dogs and cats and animal cruelty?
I think one thing that we have to remember is that we're in a country where dogs, for example, aren't commonly kept as pets. So the mindset that I have coming in, like from New Zealand, compared to the mindset that's here is totally different, totally opposite, actually. And for a lot of the community, the local community here, their only exposure to dogs may be packs of dogs that are wandering the streets, stray dogs that are wandering the streets. So convincing people who have a natural fear of dogs is not easy. What we try to encourage here in our community, in Umal Quayne, and I think successfully as well, is that we invite, you know, we invite people to join our volunteer walks. We have, we run a program here, an education program, where, you know, people can come. They can experience being around a dog, safely being around a dog with our handlers. They are taught how to behave around dogs, taught to, you know, to learn different signs that dogs display as well. We have schools. We've got a school visit tomorrow, actually, from Dubai Scholars. So educating children at a young age is really important as well. So when we work within our community, it's with that mindset and understanding, you know, that a lot of people here, they haven't had the exposure that we've had growing up in New Zealand. I grew up with dogs. You know, we always had dogs and we regard dogs as, you know, as family. Mm. But that's not necessarily the same mindset that we face here in the UAE. Another problem also is a transient community that we have in the UAE. So a lot of the stray dogs that are here are actually second and third generation dogs that have been abandoned, you know, by their owners as well. And then we have the labour force. So a lot of the cruelty that happens to animals, especially in the industrial areas, by a lot of the labourers. We do have labourers in the industrial areas that are very compassionate. But then there's a segment of workers that aren't compassionate at all towards animals. Mm. So,
I mean, that is, you know, the problem within, I suppose, within all communities, that you get people who like animals and then people that don't like animals. Indeed, within our own family, I mean, my sister just is scared of dogs, whereas I love them. So you do get that sort of contrast in relationships. It's so interesting to hear of the work you're doing to try to encourage people to come round to keeping pets. And it is important that if people do see cruelty, that they do report it. There is a section on the Ministry of Climate Change and Environment website. I've just been looking for it, actually. I can't quite find it yet.
It's the bio alert. The link is
there. Oh, there it is. Yes, I've seen it here. Yes. So it's if you go to bio, SEC, so SEC, alert.ae, and there's a very clear button where you can report an incident. So I'll just say that again, biosec, SEC, alert.ae. And so if you do see any problems, then do report it to there. Amira, thank you so much for your time. Really, really
You're
appreciate
welcome.
It. Thank you.
Thank you.
Great to get Amira William on air, Director of Stray Dogs at Mulquain. If you want to adopt, don't shop, you can always head up to their sanctuary to see if there's any pets that you can adopt.
Yes, I actually asked her before the interview because my kids are too young to own a dog. I don't think that they're responsible enough, but they love being around dogs. And she says, we organize private visits and you can go and play with the dogs and, you know, just see how it is to own one.
Amazing.
This is The Agenda with Georgia Tolley
on Dubai Eye 103.8.
The Agenda is live Monday to Friday from 10 a.m. till 1 p.m.